Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann, sharing stories of our food.
And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to spend a week exploring the advancements of controlled environment growing. From greenhouses to glasshouses to vertical farms, each using different techniques like hydroponics, aeroponics, and even soil-based growing, I learned the world of growing our food inside in controlled environment perfectly suited for optimal performance and reduced risk is changing exponentially. Much of my time spent exploring the innovation economy and horticultural advancements was in the Westlands, a small area west of Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Perfectly situated at the end of the Rhine River, the Dutch have leveraged this proximity to build out the Silicon Valley of indoor agricultural production. It was explained to me that in this small municipality in the Netherlands, they have 10 times the footprint under glass growing food that we have in the entire United States. That was in 2015, so that could have changed. But as far as IP, they expressed to me that 75% of global glass house production, which we would refer to as greenhouse production, is Dutch innovation. The ability to use this production approach, combined and value added, with everything else that's coming from Europe, which is shipped down the Rhine, has allowed the Netherlands to become the second largest exporter of food in the world. Not bad for a country of 17 million and a landmass the size of Vermont. That type of efficiency and savvy planning is so Dutch, and something for us to all evaluate. I also spent some time in Middelsbiers, near Eindhoven. In the region, which is predominantly known for Dutch dairy, I met with Jorrit Jonkers, who's a co-owner and operator of Oeschat Organics. Jonkers is well known for readying the EU delegates for the capacity to grow organic or biologic food on their home turf year-round in soil under glass. A simple summation for what I learned is that the future of horticultural production require additional precision in practice and best utilization of our natural resources, and innovations associated to controlled environment production over the past decade has grown by leaps and bounds ready for that challenge. No matter the flavor of indoor production, these practices all reduce the risk of exposure to toxins like synthetic pesticides, fungicides, and fertilizers. These practices also produce a consistent supply of food derived regionally, locally, or even hyperlocally, which is a true solution for servicing demand for safer food, both conventional and organic, with backstory and provenance for a broader audience. And all this scales, as controlled glasshouse production is truly local, everywhere, via capacity building. Additionally, the precision of indoor, hydroponic, or soil-based growing are both highly efficient for water, energy, and resource utilization. It's unparalleled conservation growing. Last, as market awareness and thus market demand expands for local food grown in these controlled environments, this is a good investment intangible real assets with a ticket. Once established, it's an investment vehicle with strong cash flow that is applicable to leveraging numerous incentives and credits. These advancements and efficiencies in controlled environment growing afford new perspective in how local food can be consistent, cost-effective, healthier, and safer to population densities in the U.S. that clamor for more. With economic modeling in tow, food grown indoors is a triple bottom line approach to solidify nutrient security and offer health for a greater volume of our population from diverse demographics. Today, we welcome a guest set on changing some of that Dutch rain in controlled environment growing and pushing the envelope in new direction that puts growing where consumers are at. An innovator in the progressive world of vertical farming, we welcome Mark Oshima, the CMO and co-founder of AeroFarms. Welcome, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. And fantastic introduction, and really underscores what the opportunity is all about, and excited to share more about what we're doing.
Well, please, let's do that. Let's jump right in. You are doing some pretty cool stuff at Arrow Farms. Tell us what you're up to.
Yeah, fundamentally, we are down this path of transforming agriculture by growing indoors in warehouses. And so our ability to control, create the perfect environment for the plants allows us to think about how we can enable local production all year round and be able to grow safe, nutritious, and even better, delicious food. And so this is really thinking about a new category of food that's going to be better for you and better flavor. And so you want to change behavior, increase consumption, you make it taste good. And so we're a passionate group of people here. We're 130 people as an organization. Our company, Arrow Farms, we've been around since 2004. We started out up in the Finger Lakes area of upstate New York. Our chief science officer, Dr. Ed Harwood, one of our co-founders, really pioneered this new way of farming. And so this is actually the next stage of hydroponics. It's a form of hydroponics called aeroponics, and that's the arrow in Arrow Farms. And it refers to our ability to mist the roots, actually, with the right water and the right nutrients. And it's a way of growing that allows us to use 95% less water than the field farmer, as well as 40% less than typical hydroponic farmers as well. And so being really judicious with our resources, we're able to grow in a controlled environment without any pesticides. And so this is a clean, residue-free product. And then the things that we're really focusing on, though, is really celebrating the flavors, the varieties, and bringing back some excitement to the category. And so this is a way of leveraging technology, engineering, plant biology in a completely new way.
I think that's a big difference, too, because when people think of, maybe they think of throughput, especially from hydroponics, it's not necessarily around flavor profiles. How are you working on introducing these different flavors, the different plant types, and then putting that into play into markets?
This is what's exciting in terms of how we think about this. And so our team, you know, we're built up in terms of experts around plant biology, plant physiology, crop physiology, thinking about our engineering. So all of our growing technology is our proprietary growing system that allows us to think about how to create the perfect environment for the plants. And so we really think of ourselves as the plant whisperers, thinking exactly what does a plant need in terms of each stage of maturation. And again, thinking about what are the attributes, what is the market looking for? And we can actually grow in a very controlled, in a very systematic way to be able to stress the plants in different ways to be able to express itself with these different attributes. So we can make something more peppery. We can make something more sweet. We can change the crunchiness. We can change even the leaf shape or the color. And what's exciting is that, again, it's using science and technology in a new way that allows us to be much more targeted and much more judicious with our resources.
Let's go back to the actual facilities themselves. And, you know, I had described in a lot of the Dutch technologies around the horizontal or the larger footprint environment, but you're focused on going upwards in these vertical configurations that you just mentioned, maybe old factory buildings. How is it different than the horizontal glass houses that people think of? And what are the opportunities when you start to put this in vertical environments?
Yeah, this is about really thinking about how we can change the thinking around productivity, and all of a sudden it's productivity around cubic foot, not the square foot. And some of the fundamental differences, again, going back to even this concept of the greenhouse, glass house versus the warehouse. We grow indoors without the sun, and the sun is one of the biggest variables that you have from a growing aspect, whether it's the season in terms of time of year or weather, right? And so that's one of the biggest considerations when we think about how to normalize our growing process. And it turns out that plants don't need sunlight. They need spectrum of light. And so we're really thinking about the building blocks of the plants and what spectrum, what frequency, what intensity allows us to think, again, how to optimize that plant in the growing environment. So these facilities that we're growing in many cases we're converting warehouses. In some cases we're building ground up. We've built 9 farms to date. But to paint a picture, these are facilities with 40-foot high ceilings. Our growing towers have multiple levels, 12, sometimes 14 levels of growing. And these are beds that are stacked on top of each other. And the idea that, again, all of a sudden we can think about that growing vertically. And we can grow a wide range of different crops. The productivity that we have, specifically for something like leafy greens, for example, is 390 times more productive than that field farm on an annualized basis, partly driven by the vertical nature. Also by the fact is we can actually enhance that crop cycle. So we can grow in a half or even a third of the time it may take out in the field because we're giving the plant exactly what it needs when it needs it to be able to optimize that growth. And then there are no weeds that the plants are competing with. And so the idea that we can actually get greater output per square foot as well, you factor in all those three, it's really is what's driving the 390 times greater productivity. Again, while using 95% less water, and then again, no pesticides. And so we're fundamentally changing, you know, how you think about where your farms can go, where you place those farms, and fundamentally we're trying to make a greater connection with their food and where it's coming from. And it's by the community, for the community. We locate them in urban areas, and really being very efficient in how we deliver the product.
So maybe you could put this in applicable terms. So you have 9 farms. Obviously, they vary depending on probably size and capacity. But what type of production volume are you able to create in your farms, or what type of throughput do you have?
In Newark, New Jersey, where we have our global headquarters, and it's also home to the world's largest indoor vertical farm for indoor leafy greens, it has an annual capacity of 2 million pounds. And that is really dependent on our customers and the final product mix. And so this is fundamentally changing, you know, again, the age-old, you know, sort of adage of the farmer grows it, hopes to take it to market, and hopes to sell it. We actually are everything that we grow has already been accounted for. And so this is just-in-time growing, so hyper-efficient as well in terms of we think of things about how do we be more efficient, how do we eliminate things like food waste, and minimize that spoilage that typically you find through a very complex supply chain out in the field.
All right, a bit more in the background here. So AeroFarms is a leading clean technology champion building and operating state-of-the-art indoor vertical farms in major cities around the world. Helping set new culinary standards for freshness and flavor, AeroFarms has been recognized as a Global Clean Tech 100 Inc.com top 25 disruptive companies, winner of the World Technology Award, and most impactful environmental company, and a finalist for the Circular Awards of the World Economic Forum. So this is some pretty cool tech that doesn't go too far from selling your crops to broader audiences. Who are buying your products? Where is that 2 million pounds going to?
Yeah, what's exciting is that this is really, we think about democratizing access to good food. And so we work with a wide range of different customers, major retailers, supermarket chains. We're talking about major food service companies, major institutions like schools, major restaurants. So we're really thinking about the whole spectrum. And in fact, we even have our own farm stand where we open up our doors and the community can come in and get access to fresh food. And it's so critical where we are in Newark, New Jersey, which is actually a food desert. So access to fresh, healthy food is quite limited. And so we're helping address that on multiple levels.
Is there potential for additional capacity building, or how do you scale this out? You have 9 farms now. Is the goal another 9 farms, or do you license this out in a different way so people can partake? Do you have a brand name on it? How does it get out to the consumer?
Yeah, what we're really focused on is really thinking about how we can build these responsible kind of farms in major cities all over the world. And so we're very much global in our focus and scope. We have projects in development in the Middle East, Northern Europe, and Asia as well. And so it's addressing, I mean, these macro pressures and tensions that we're seeing in terms of climate change, access to fresh water, access to arable land, issues around worker welfare. These are really acute issues, and, you know, we feel the pain here in the U.S., but worldwide, there are even more. And so this is helping address, you know, the broader market opportunities. And so we really are envisioning, you know, how this business will continue to grow and scale and meet those needs.
Going back even well before you started in 2004, was aeroponics, wasn't this a NASA invention in the first place?
Exactly. So this idea, you know, no frontier, you know, we're going to be looking at, right, in terms of where we could put these farms. NASA had been looking at and had developed some of the early work around this. And the idea was, again, how to grow in a more efficient way. And so you have a lot of control, a lot of precision. And when you're thinking about space travel and having very limited resources, you're trying to identify what are some of the best ways of doing that. We've taken that mindset, but thinking about commercial and commercialization and thinking about scale, And so we have a very different approach than anyone else out there with the aeroponics and our system of how we're delivering those nutrients. And so it's a very different undertaking than trying to feed just a few in a spaceship, right? This is about how do we feed the masses. And that's what the team is really focused on in terms of, like, how do we build more of these large-scale farms to be able to meet those needs.
So as you sit back in your memory foam bed prior to eating your freeze-dried ice cream, you can have some peppery delicious salad greens, all from thanks to NASA.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the beginning. But I want to highlight that that's one element, right, in terms of the technology. The idea of, like, how do you make this commercial? How do you make this operational? And so we think about our team of experts, right? I mean, there's a ton of PhDs, incredibly bright people running around. But we have really seasoned operators and experienced operators understanding, again, this is really setting a new standard. You highlighted some of the challenges around safety and food safety. And so this is a way of growing where we're marrying what's called good agricultural practices and good manufacturing practices and really setting a new standard. So we're able to track from seed to package every single element, all the key inputs that are going into that. And it's allowing us to be, you know, very, very on spot and on target for traceability and safety. And so this is, again, how do we do more with less and being very mindful of that approach.
It does seem as an opportunity to put these in hyper-local locations. We've talked about, that interest of people knowing where their food coming from, being servicing their communities. Boy, it would seem you could put these environments in every college campus. They could break down silos of education. You could have the new dean putting their name on an Aero Farms instead of a new library, because here's an opportunity to service what the kids are eating, teach people about the future of food, the connection to the environment. Have you seen any interest that starts to break down these barriers and create new potential for your offerings?
Without question, there's a tremendous amount of interest in terms of, you know, people looking at where their food's coming from, how it's grown, how it's prepared, how it's sourced. And this is, you know, one way to allow that to get even closer. And so one of the programs that we're really excited about, one of our farms, working farms that we've had, has been in an inner city school here in Newark, New Jersey, for over 9 years at Phillips Academy Charter School. It's a school that, in fact, Michelle Obama got a chance to visit before she left office to really see, you know, what's happening in terms of kids and food literacy and food values and understanding about, again, where their food's coming from. So our growing system, this technology is very modular. It can be repurposed to different spaces and sizes. And so we actually have a farm system that's right in their dining hall. And the school is very conscious about calling it a dining hall as well, because it's another learning environment. It's another classroom. And so as a result, you know, the kids are able to see where their food is grown, how it's grown. It's a kindergarten through eighth grade program. It's typically operated by the farm, is typically operated by the sixth graders, but everyone has exposure to it. And it's the shortest farm-to-table experience around. It goes right into the salad bar, right into the kitchen. And the kids are eating it. That's even the best part, because they're growing it. And so, again, helping facilitate that changing behavior. People often talk about we're creating our future customers, but more importantly, we think we're creating our future workforce as well.
Hmm. Yeah, it's immersive learning, right? And when you get kids that are engaged in this, not only are they going to be that future consumer, but they're the best advocates for people to buy the products and to become appreciative of we have a changing food system.
Yeah, we see that really amplifier effect in terms of the impact into the broader community. We have students, and we've been there now for 9 years. We see even generations of students and the families. And the stories that they share, it's incredibly energizing. But, you know, they share stories about how their family has changed, you know, some of their behavior, some of their activities of either going vegan or growing or just getting more aware. And this is something that we're excited to be part of as well. And we think about how, as a company, can we have multiple impacts in a community. And so you're highlighting before, we've been honored with some environmental awards. The company very much fundamentally has always been a very mission-driven organization, thinking about all the different stakeholders. The environment is at the core, but we think about the community, we think about our team, we think about our partners. And we've really taken this to a very serious level. We are a certified B Corporation. And so this is a designation that means that there's a scorecard. It's all about transparency, about how well we're doing on environmental and societal factors. So the idea that we are doing more with less, growing with 95% less water, or no pesticides, But the idea that we're creating jobs, fair wages, year-round employment, which is not typical in agriculture, and being able to provide opportunities and really breathing new life back into cities. When we think about how manufacturing has disappeared, you know, we're able to create jobs and really help drive that economic development as well. So this is exciting, you know, that we can have an impact on multiple different levels, from the education to food desert access, and then in terms of, you know, job creation. It's really exciting from an organization standpoint. And just this concept of by the community, for the community, you know, 40% of our team lives in Newark, 85% live within 15 miles of Newark. So incredible connection, you know, within the community here.
And speaking out or engaging more of the advocacy and awareness of this, and as you had mentioned earlier, democratizing this to a broader audience, getting more people involved in their food systems and having it grown within their backyard is very exciting. You also tried to do that by working with some of our rock stars of food, our chefs. So you sit as a board co-chair on the Chefs Collaborative. What are you doing with the Chefs Collaborative, and why is that important for your focus?
Yeah, this is an exciting honor and opportunity to be able to have really a nexus of both personal and professional interests coming together. And it starts with this deep passion around, you know, how can we do better? How can we create a more equitable food system? How do we create a more sustainable food system? And Chefs Collaborative is an incredible organization. It's a nonprofit that's been around for 25 years. It was founded by some of the industry heroes that we think about today, Alice Waters or Rick Bayless, and, you know, thinking about the work that they helped pioneer and champion and continue to advocate for today. Chefs Collaborative is this amazing organization that's comprised of these incredible chapters. So it's a grassroots. It's really thinking about, you know, for the chefs to help give them the right tools to make the better decisions. And so we almost think of it as sort of a continuing education to help inform chefs to make better choices. And the inspiration and the motto for Chefs Collaborative is change menu, change lives. And so chefs at that nexus can have a very powerful role in terms of what's being served, how it's being served, how it's being sourced. And the work we're doing is thinking not only the chef, but the whole food system. So it's the growers, the producers, the fishermen, you know, the different parts of the equation, and having that all come together. And Chefs Collaborative is focused on helping foster that. It's an incredible community, incredibly dedicated people who they're living, breathing, you know, what we're talking about every single day, making these decisions. So addressing things on sustainable sourcing, sustainable seafood. The core platforms for Chefs Collaborative are on seafood solutions, something called Meat Matters, in terms of thinking about how meat and livestock and the raising and the practices there. Thinking about food waste, and so, again, how to be, you know, very judicious with purchasing, and as well as then using whole animal, whole, even on the vegetables, you know, there's a whole root to leaf movement. And so, and we do a series of different events. And so, you know, this root to leaf movement, you know, you're mentioning different chefs we're working with. Chef Steven Satterfield out of Atlanta has a major event coming up at the end of March that it's just really exciting to, again, put a spotlight on food waste, how we can do more with less.
I want to talk a little bit about some advancements or changes that have happened in organic certification. So yep. We've seen that, you know, with the change of the oversight board allowing now for hydroponics or aeroponics to be included in certification of USDA organic, how does that affect you? And are you adopting those practices, and will you go for an organic certification?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is one where, we think that the U.S. is creating more confusion, right? So we think about certifications, we think about different standards that are out there. We need to help the consumer how to navigate through that. And we're not doing it justice by having a different approach with our USDA organic program versus the world. The basic premise of is it grown in soil is an important one in terms of addressing the vitality of the soil. And so we actually, you know, think that there should be more consistency, you know, with that approach. And so today, as a hydroponic grower, aeroponic grower, we could, in fact, go for an organic designation. But there are a few reasons why we have not yet. And the primary one is that we have not found a suitable good use of organic fertilizer. And this is a part of the industry and side of the equation that there's not a lot of awareness in terms of, you know, what's happening there. But we have concerns both in terms of pathogens that, you know, potentially could be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But fundamentally, when we think about the use of fertilizers and nutrients, we're thinking, again, back to the 17 essential elements the plants need, the macronutrients, micronutrients. And we have developed our own proprietary fertilizer calculators, thinking about what the plant needs at different stages of maturation by variety, that allows us to really individually add each one of those elements. And the organic fertilizers out there today would not give us that level of precision. And so we don't want to compound things when we think about creating some imbalances out in the ecosystem, right? So today, the number one real fertilizer that's being used is pelletized, sterilized chicken manure, pellets.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, you know, if you need to add a little bit more nitrogen, you end up with too much phosphorus, right, by using that fertilizer. And so you're creating imbalances out there. And so there's not a lot of appreciation of how challenging it is, both in terms of thinking about that ecosystem, but also in the sourcing of that product. And not only is that, but things like fish blood or bone meal or, you know, organic, what they say is volcanic ash, or bat dung, right, that's being used out in the fields. But those are, you know, coming from really far distances as well. And so it's just a reminder that large-scale farming, and again, how do we feed the masses and how to do it, you know, in a way that's going to be responsible, is this challenging, you know, with some of the resources that are available today.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I am on the production side more so. So we get a lot of that conversation around the chicken scat, the bat guano, and how much can we take before we have to replenish those systems. And that is a bit lost in the mentality of where organic's at, where it's that yes, no question of input-based approach and not looking at the systems approach to that, which it seems you guys are focused on trying to integrate this. It's a modern system, but you are looking at your inputs to create a better outcrop for your customer. How do you express that to your consumers?
Yeah, so how do we express that? There are a few ways, and you know, there's education that's involved and inviting them into that journey. Education is the number one, you know, defining aspect when we think of it. It cuts through any socioeconomic, but awareness and understanding and appreciation of what's happening and goes back to this broader interest in terms of, again, where the food's coming from and how it's prepared or how it's sourced. And so it's about engaging, and it's about telling different parts of that story. And so we lead with the idea that right now there's a real appreciation around water. So 70% of our fresh water goes to agriculture, 70% of the pollution is coming from agriculture. And, you know, headline news are around the drought, access to water. This is our most precious resource, and so this is a great way to invite the audience in to talk about the importance of water and the fact that we're growing with 95% less water. Really creates an opening to think about, again, what are the practices, accounts for those differences, and fundamentally starting to think about a scorecard of how can we do better. And so those are some of the ways that we're trying to bring in people. The other area is also on the use of no pesticides. And there is a major, major misperception with the organic certification as well, that there's a thought that it's organic, there's no pesticides, and that's just fundamentally not the case. And so we're trying to ultimately deliver what the consumer is saying when they say, what are their motivations for buying organic? The lack of pesticides is right up there at the top. And so this is really, really important in terms of thinking, again, how do we engage, you know, that audience and share a little bit more about practices today and the farming practices and how we're different.
Hmm. We've seen in other food categories, which has been interesting, where apples in the Northeast, for instance, can't get certain certifications for organic. So we've come with a intermediary labeling like Eco Apples, which is a brand name associated to an aggregate or collection. And it has an elevated standard to it. They get rid of the bad persistent pesticides, the neurotoxins, the hormone disruptors, the things that we're really concerned with. And
yep.
You have more responsible practice. And I think that's what's exciting about what you're doing here is cleaning up the salad greens, anything that highly susceptible when we're shipping this across the country and they're using questionable practice often in many of those conventional approaches to growing our greens. And that's what we're directly consuming. Boy, now you can really understand where things are coming from, the clean approach to this. And what I find intriguing for what you're establishing here is it goes layers deep, right? We're not just talking about just behind, you know, stuck behind the cloak. You are opening up for an opportunity for everyone to see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is about how we can help lead the industry. And so as a company, our CEO, David Rosenberg, is very involved with the World Economic Forum. He actually co-chairs the Global Task Force for the Circular Economy. So we're talking about the environment, you know, how do we eliminate waste and how to do more with less. And so this is about how we are at a much, much broader level trying to, you know, advocate, you know, across the world about this way of farming. He also sits on the Agriculture Committee there for World Economic Forum. As a company, we're very involved with the B20 to inform the G20. We're part of an organization called the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, Circular Economy 100. Again, the idea that we can help advocate more responsible ways of approaching this. One of the partnerships that we're really excited about is the work we're doing with Rockefeller Foundation, 100 Resilient Cities. And so we are a strategic partner there, thinking about food resiliency. And again, this is helping cities really rethink about from a system approach, what we were just talking about, how to think about not only access to food, but again, how to bring the farms into the cities and urban environments. And so we have a much, much broader lens about what we're trying to do from a company standpoint. We're building an industry. We're building what we think is a better practice. And one of the things that we're doing as well is helping lead the way with the new formation of something called the CEA Food Safety Coalition Group. This is the Controlled Environment Agriculture. And this is, again, helping coalesce, bring together the different indoor farmers, both greenhouse as well as the vertical farmers, to really be able to come together as a as an industry to be able to illustrate, again, the differences that we have. And so as a company, you know, we've been involved in sitting on the FDA Romaine Advisory Task Force. Unfortunately, you know, the recalls and what we're seeing from the field are more prevalent than ever before. And there's a real appreciation that we need to, you know, really kind of rethink about how we're doing things differently. And so we're excited to be able to help lead the industry on a few different fronts in terms of productivity. We talk about safety. The thing that we haven't had a chance to really talk about that gets us most excited about, and certainly our consumers, is the taste and flavor, you know, what we're doing, because we're able to put that first and foremost at the heart of what we're doing. And so the response we're getting from key tastemakers, top chefs, top buyers, you know, at the different selling partners, is that they feel like their palate has been woken up again. And so, again, we've forgotten how things should taste or can taste. And, you know, we're able to do things to get that and rekindle that excitement around that. We're excited. You know, we work with top chefs like Marcus Samuelson, David Chang got so excited by what we're doing, he actually invested in us. And so, you know, we think about the impact we can have and working with key, you know, thought leaders like that as well is about telling different parts of the story. So the varieties, the flavors. And again, fundamentally, if you want to change behavior and consumption, you got to make it taste good. So we're really excited about that part of the story as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You're, without that taste, you might get that acquisition of customer, but if it tastes bad or if it's kind of iffy or it's dull, you're not going to have that retention. So that's the key part. And I think from what you've described to us, the work with the Chef Collaborative, that you're working for community engagement, but also that focus on bringing this to market and engaging people to be part of this is exciting. Mark, let me just read a little bit more about your background for a final question. You're an award-winning marketer and passionate about food. Mark Oshima has led the marketing for major supermarket chains and specialty food retail with a BA from Columbia College and an MBA from Columbia Business School. Mark is a co-chair in the Chef Collaborative, we mentioned, and a member of the United Fresh Produce Marketing and Merchandising Council. So I would say, Mark, that's not your traditional producer of food background. What got you into this in the first place? What was your driving factor?
Yeah, there are a few influences, and you know, you think about opportunities of what we can do and how we can do things differently. And so one of the things that really influenced my thought process was the work I did on the marketing advisory board for the Food Bank for New York City. I was part of that for a number of years. And getting a chance to really appreciate issues around access to food. And here we are in New York, the major city, and people don't have food. It's just not right. And so thinking about how do we change our system and thinking about the next generation. So I have a young son and thinking about, you know, again, how do we build a better future? And this opportunity to create AeroFarms was really an opportunity to think, how do we think, again, from day one of these different stakeholders, and how do we be, you know, part of the community, for the community? How do we think about the next generation? And so this all helped coalesce and come together in terms of thinking about a different kind of company. And I just want to highlight as well just a little bit in terms of, like, when we did the Certified B Corporation, that's a, you know, it's a benefit corporation, it was really important because it extended beyond the world of agriculture. And so we think about other verticals, other companies, you know, the Patagonias of the world, the Stonyfields of the world, really leaders that are helping think about how business can be a force for good. And so this is something that transcended this agriculture, and we thought that was really important. And so that's been our lens. And to me, that's what's motivating about, you know, again, how do we make a difference? And seeing our team grow and seeing our organization grow has been, you know, part of that equation.
What can we expect to see from AeroFarms within the next year or the next 3 years?
Well, what's exciting is just the trajectory of building more farms, more points of door in terms of where the product is going to be distributed. But what's really exciting is this, the work we're doing on understanding plants. And so we think about our mission as an organization. It's to grow the best plants possible for the betterment of humanity. It's bold. It's audacious, but that's what we are inspired to do every single day.
An underpinning for all this future growth. That makes a lot of sense. And I'll just close by saying that, you know, with the world's largest indoor farm producing 2 million pounds in Newark, servicing jobs, creating local access to food, developing a model that is 390 times more productive and saving 95% more water than traditional conventional growing, all focused on the spectrum of light and getting it right and then using advancements in technology, but coming down to that fundamental aspect, which is flavor, flavor profile, getting us engaged, getting our mouth and our olfactory senses involved to come back and buy more delicious greens. So, Mark Oshima, I'll just say thank you so much for taking the time to share such wisdom. I learned a great deal, and I'm sure our listening audience will as well. Where can our audience learn more about what you're doing? Is it the website? And where can we buy your product?
Yeah, a few things. So without question, aerofarms.com, and that's as well as our retail brand is under a brand called Dream Greens. And so you can find us as well at Love Dream Greens and be able to learn more about our story and how we're coming to market and where you can find the product.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for taking the time, Mark, and I'll just say until next time.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you as well.